Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, August 7th. Today's session is titled Wonders of Our Wilderness and Ways to Practice Its Conservation. Low Impact Cleaning, Practical Ways to Practice Conservation in Our World's Resources in the Home. Presented by Susan Reynolds Ballinger. The tape number is 2002-01. Let's listen in.
Maybe think about how approaching them more spiritually, but also a little more practically. This is a book that the Holden Bookstore is such a great resource. Two summers ago, I was up here, and I found this book in the bookstore. And the author, Annie Bertold Bond, I had her first edition. 10 years ago, she published a very slim, tiny little manual. And it's one of those books that kind of changed my life. So when I bought this new one, I was so excited because it's really a complete one-stop place to get information about principles for lower toxic living in all areas. And I'm going to focus just on cleaning products today. But this is just a marvelous book. And I'm going to tell you kind of a funny story on myself because why I got interested in this. For many years, we had lived in apartments, moved around a lot. I didn't have my own home to take care of, and I was really happy because I didn't want to spend a lot of time cleaning. So about 10 years ago, my husband and I knew we were going to move to Wenatchee. It was going to be our permanent home. We came out in April, and in a weekend, we bought a house. And that was sort of overwhelming to me, never having been a homeowner. So I went back. We lived in Wisconsin at the time, and I went back to the public library, and I started checking books out about houses and about cleaning because I just didn't know much. I also had a four-year-old at the time, who had asthma. So I was kind of thinking about indoor air issues. And I knew we were moving to Wenatchee, which was an intensely agricultural area where they do a lot of pesticide spraying for apples. And the house we bought was within sight of an apple orchard. So I kind of had these antennas that went up. The first book I ran across in the library is a book called The Healthy House. And I highly recommend this. I went to the website a couple days ago, and there's a second edition of this book out. There's several other books. He goes through all the aspects of materials used to build a house and talks about issues. They're scientifically documented studies, and he really focuses on air quality issues. Today we live in very well-sealed homes where they're very well insulated, and that's for heating and cooling reasons. But what that also means is that the air inside our homes often is not circulating with fresh outdoor air. And with the asthma concerns for my child and my own sinus infections, I really got into that piece of it. And having to do with different kinds of filters you can put on your furnaces, all that kind of stuff. But the other issue that came up in this book was Windex. When you're spraying these commercial cleaners, you're putting aerosols into the air that become part of your indoor air. So that issue of indoor air quality led me to this Annie Bertold Bond's book, the first edition, about cleaners. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to go through, she has a wonderful introduction in here that lays out the principles. So that's what I want to kind of go over today. And at the end, I'm going to give you two of her recipes that you can just, I brought some handouts, you can take them. And I also brought a host of literature from many sources. You know, the internet is really an amazing thing. 10 years ago when I was doing this research, it was hard to come across this material. And I did stumble across a Washington group that I'm a member of. It's called Washington Toxics Coalition. And they are a wonderful resource. They have a scientist, Philip Dickey, who's been publishing monthly healthy home articles. A lot of them are on the internet. I printed some out. But they're a wonderful resource and also a way, if you want to take some political action, to be involved in reduction of use of toxic products. They're really working on schools, reducing and notifying families about when pesticides are being used on school grounds. And the Seattle School Board just accepted a proposal that they initiated in terms of integrated pest management for school grounds. So it's one of those positive groups that's working on science, and it's a narrow group, so it's something that I'm enjoying being a supporter of. And then I also enjoy using the information. Washington Toxics Coalition, and you'll have time to come up afterwards, and the websites are here, and I've printed out just a sampling from those. But we need to share a little wisdom here, so we won't do everybody, but let's just go around, and What's a remedy that you have? Let's try and do quick, because I think you'll be amazed at our collective wisdom here. Over here, any kind of remedy that you have, family lore, about getting rid of stains or cleaning? Yeah.
My favorite one is I would stick felt-tip pens in my pocket.
Right.
And you notice that grandmother used to just pour milk through it and
then
take out.
Neat. That's using the principles of acids and bases. Cool. Okay. Any other ones?
Vinegar and water.
Okay, what is vinegar and water for?
Cleaning windows.
Cleaning windows with vinegar and water. Great.
And the surfaces of the counters, because I understand it kills germs.
Good. So this family lore, that's what she's going to, one of her main principles of vinegar, is it's a germ killer. It's actually the bacteria side.
Also, with urine on carpet, vinegar kills scent for animals.
Great. So again, using some acid-based principles, neutralizing urine with vinegar. Does anybody know about you get berry stains on your pants and you boil water before they will find them in there? That are maybe practical, but not so powerful. So here's a book, Better Basics for the Home. And her main theme in the book is simple ingredients for simple tasks. And that's kind of a guiding principle. As you're going along, you're in that grocery store aisle looking at 40 product choices, step back and think, okay, you know, what is the simple task I'm doing? What's the simplest way to deal with that? And then her basic principle is, let's try and use alternative products for what's marketed today. These products come from nature. And if we can find something that's natural rather than a man-made chemical, that's a first choice to make. And we're going to do a couple things. We're going to reduce our impact on water. And I have to admit, I'm a biologist, and at the time I was teaching intro biology classes to college students, and we spent a couple weeks going through the litany of world environmental problems. And I tell you, that's pretty depressing to spend one day on the ozone and the next day on water pollution. You kind of go through and you feel deflated. It's like, oh, these problems are too big. So at home, and also as a parent, I'm thinking, how can I model to my children, you know, practicing what I preach? We're thinking about these big problems, but what can I do inside my home? So that was a real motivation to me. Like, I need to try and practice principles that affect, I know me alone won't affect them, but my habits amplified over a large number of people would have an effect on water quality. And think about where your tap water comes from. Most of you live near rivers, so I would, I know in Wenatchee we get our water from a well that's adjacent to the Columbia River. So the Columbia River is basically charging that groundwater source. And then we have a sewage septic plant right in town that then, when I pour my cleaning products down the sink, they then go down to the sewage treatment plant, are cleaned up, sanitized, and then put into the Columbia River. And then the next town downriver may be taking water out of that. So you think about our cumulative effect of how we're getting water. And then the other one is the indoor air quality issue, which I mentioned to you. And just to let you know, the author got into this 15 years ago because she had an unusual condition. She is a chemically sensitive person. So this is a very unusual thing. It doesn't affect most of us. But that was her motivation. She was having terrible physical symptoms because of her exposure to a lot of things. So that was her motivation to sort of research everything from personal care products to the kinds of paint that you use on your interior walls to the kind of cleaning products. So luckily most of us aren't afflicted with that extreme sensitivity. And then finally, that's kind of the personal health thing. And a lot of people like this approach because it's thrifty. You know, think about the money you spend every month on, say, cleaning products. It's a way to cut down on your monthly expenses. And I have to admit, there's great pride in getting this kind of new knowledge and using it. And it also kind of simplifies your life. You really only need two or three cleaning products on your shelf to do most things. And I have to go back and tell you part of my funny story, because we moved to Wenatchee into this house that was fairly new. And so I decided I was going to be very scientific, and I really started reading the books, and I found an organization called the Clean Team, and they're out of San Francisco, and it's, I think, two men who own a company, a professional cleaning company, and they've written a series of books, one's called Speed Cleaning. So when I found in the library Speed Cleaning, I checked it out and brought it home, and they have a lot of neat principles that apply to this too. They say, if it's not dirty, don't clean it. And things like, have the proper tools. And you know, think about your cleaning tools at home. Do you really have a really good brush? Or are you using something that, you know, was cheap? You know, those principles of honor yourself and buy good tools. Do you have that cleaning bucket that has everything in it and carry from room to room so you're not having to make trips back and forth? At every sink in your house, did you go ahead and get that little tiny bucket where you keep your scrubber and you have a nice spray bottle that works well? So when you need to clean, it's right there. And also, do you have good rags? And I actually, this book recommended it. I went to the local linen service and I bought old restaurant 100% cotton cleaning cloths. So I had to buy 100 of them. So I have these gorgeous pink restaurant linens. They're this big, 100% cotton. They are lovely. And so I have a huge basket, so I can use 30 or 40 rags at a time. And I'm not using old diapers with the strings hanging off, or, you know, an old towel with a hole in it. I've got a good cleaning structure. So I would recommend the Speed Cleaning book. They talk about, you know, you go into the bathroom and you go clockwise, and then you clean yourself out of the room. So I spend all of June and July and August reading about speed cleaning and making my own cleaners, and I did not clean a thing. It was and I had a two-year-old and a four-year-old and a six-year-old, and I tell you, when I finally woke up and realized I better start cleaning, it was kind of funny. So don't do that, but go gradual and switch over to some of these principles. So here's her common sense rule of thumb, and this is the acronym. I'm not a real acronym person, so I can't, this doesn't do much for me, but it might for you. But here's the principle in the book using GRAS. Use only materials that have been around so long and that they've been used by people for so long without harm that they're generally regarded as safe. So generally regarded as safe. And that's where we go back to the vinegar and the lemon juice and the salt. Things that have been used for the millennium. And then the other thing is to think about cause and effect. And this is where that principles from speed cleaning kind of comes in. If it's not dirty, don't clean it. Maybe when you're there in the grocery store aisle, when you're trying to buy a product, decide if maybe you could just buy less. You know, maybe instead of using 3 or 4 squirts of Windex on your mirror, maybe 1 squirt on the rag is enough to do it. So just decreasing what you're using. I know that's a principle in the simplicity movement for things like using shampoo. Use half. Use half the shampoo you normally use. It will probably do the job. And maybe you can purchase another product. It is wonderful today. Most of our grocery stores, especially if you have a health food department, they are carrying a wonderful line of products, the kinds of products that you can make yourself, or if you'd rather, you can buy them, things that have the non-toxic ingredients. You have to be a careful label reader. Just because it says green on the label doesn't necessarily mean it has the products that meet this GRAS criteria. So it's easier now. In fact, in the last couple of months, I bought a couple of cleaners that contain the same ingredients I make at home, but I got lazy. So it's kind of nice. You can choose to buy them. And then finally, you can choose to make them yourself. And then the signal words, the Washington Toxics Coalition, I printed their handout here, they do a nice job of just talking about general health principles of cleaning products. And some of the words are that you can look for, if you see the word danger or poison, that's an indicator that it's got the higher toxicity products in it. So when you're looking at the grocery store shelf and you see danger or poison, maybe go to a similar product that doesn't have those two label words on it. Warning or caution indicate more of a medium hazard, but they have to use caution on any kind of product that would cause an irritation to the eye. So just the word caution on a label doesn't mean that it's not a lower toxic product. But again, it's that spending time doing the label reading in the store. Now in Annie's book, she has 5 principles, and I think the first 4 really apply to cleaning products. The last one's been getting a lot of press lately, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The first kinds of things, you want to try and avoid 5 general classes of chemicals that are known to cause human health, harm to humans or to animals through air or water. And in general, you know, think about your lawn supplies. This is a very big push in Washington State. You know, we as homeowners need to make a difference in the kind of products we use to take care of our home areas, because that runs off directly in our stormwater into our streams and affects salmon habitat. That's our Washington issue. But really go out and look at those things and, you know, can you hoe for 10 minutes versus going out and spraying with a weed reducer? Can you change the plants that you're growing so you have less of a weed problem? You know, it's really kind of a mind shift, and that's a hard one. Most of our county solid waste programs have special collection days for leftover yard products because of their toxicity. You really cannot put those products into the standard landfill. So we as homeowners really need to maybe not point our fingers so much at farmers and orchardists, but really point our fingers at ourselves. Because cumulatively, homeowners are one of the biggest parts of pesticide use. And the second issue, this is again a health issue, chlorine itself is a gas, and it's highly reactive. So if you think about the products you buy with chlorine in them, Ajax, maybe use a sink scrubber, maybe use a automatic dishwasher detergent that has chlorine in it, maybe you have a chlorine and a detergent. Just what's happening as it reacts with other products, it's volatilized in your home. Chlorine gas alone is an irritant to your lungs. It's not something we should be inhaling. And then when it combines, you probably know, never mix chlorine with ammonia. When those combine, it produces a harmful gas. And then chlorine, because it's so reactive, it forms a whole class of chemicals that are very known to cause big problems in terms of carcinogens. And Seventh Generation, I went to their website, they have a 13-page handout on chlorine that I brought. We're only going to talk today about alternatives to chlorine in cleaning products, but think about the pervasiveness of chlorine in our world. we really need it in swimming pools. You know, there really is no reasonable alternative. So we need to make sure we're using just enough in swimming pools. EPA requires it to be in our public drinking water supplies. So it's not that we need to eliminate chlorine in general, but can we reduce it where other things would work? And in household cleaning products, we have some other disinfectants that work. And we also have, in laundry, we have some other whiteners that work. So you as a homeowner can work on those two reductions of chlorine. Heavy metals, though, this is pretty much, you know, this has been more regulated, so we don't have a lot of lead and mercury. Lead paint is the classic example. You know, we've switched now, but if you're in an older home with lead paint, that's still an issue. And then volatile organic compounds. These are things in many of new carpets, that new carpet smell that you get. And these are things that are addressed in the Healthy House book. And also most paints. Now they're all alternative. They're alternative paints that don't emit these volatile organic compounds.
Can you push the transparency up?
Oh, sure. Yeah. But this is a whole large class of compounds that at the ground level, it's what's causing ozone in our cities. And that ozone is a very much a lung irritant. And formaldehyde, which is used on permapress sheets. Formaldehyde is used in a lot of areas. So if you buy new sheets and you don't wash them or air them out a while, it's off-gassing small amounts of formaldehyde. They do, yeah. So, you know, those are the kind of things where when you get new carpet, the Healthy House book, he recommends you laying it out in an outdoor place to outgas for 5 to 7 days.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and you have to all put this in perspective, and we're looking at, you know, cumulative effects. These are small amounts, but what is the buildup over time? We've only been using these classes of chemicals since the 1940s. So we don't have a long bit of human history to actually look at cumulative effects. And it's hard to isolate single effects. So if you go back to that GRAS principle, G-R-A-S, generally regarded as safe, that's a criteria to kind of minimize use of all those things. And I know I ended up buying some paint made by Miller Paint Company in Portland that it's a beautiful paint. It works just like a latex, but it doesn't have the VOCs that are emitted. And you know, you might choose, instead of buying new carpet, you might use the wood floor that's underneath and buy a wool rug. You know, those are the kinds of healthy house choices that are bigger expenses. So, you know, in our economic lives, we have to kind of always balance cost and benefit. And then here's the question. You know, we all want to have clean houses. So the big question is, well, do these things really work? And, you know, I have to say, yeah, they really work. But you also have to, again, think back to what we're fighting. We're fighting these single-celled organisms killed by salts, acids, mechanical action. Just plain soap and water is a pretty good disinfectant if it's used correctly. And think back about what soap is actually doing. Water is one of those amazing things. It has what we call surface tension. And then, you know, when you can fill a glass and so it bubbles over the top without running over the edge. That's the surface tension of the water molecules, the electrons actually kind of gluing it together. So when we want to clean something, we want to break the surface tension of water so that those things can be, quote, clean. So most of our soap is just basically doing that. And a little bit later we'll talk about detergents versus soap. But they're kind of basic, they're really simple things we're trying to do. And we might not need, say, the power of a chemical to do it if mechanical action can work as well. So here are kind of the acid-base principles. Lemon juice and white vinegar, those are the two main alternative acids. And they kill bacteria and mold. They remove scum, you know, around your sinks, that kind of buildup of soaps, and maybe you've got hard water, remove some of that. They clean wood, they clean tarnish, so if you want to do some silver polishing, an acid works there. And then the opposite are the bases, and those are things like baking soda. You probably keep a box in your fridge to absorb odor, and we have three levels of baking sodas. We have baking soda, then we have borax, which is more basic, stronger, And then we have washing soda, which is extremely basic. It has a pH of about 11, and neutral is 7. And there's a 10-fold difference between 7 and 8, and a 10-fold difference between 8 and 9. So when you get something that's 11, that's very, very alkaline or basic. And when you use washing soda, you need to wear rubber gloves. It's harmful to your hand. But all of these things dissolve grease, and they are safe as a mild abrasive. So consider switching over to baking soda instead of Comet. Baking soda, I was so excited that at the store now they sell baking soda in the shaker container. So I now have, those are I have three baking soda shakers at my bathroom sinks in my kitchen. And the one problem with using any kind of a scrubber is that it takes a lot of rinsing to get rid of it. So in the speed cleaning book, they talk about only use a scrubber where you need a scrubber because you have to rinse it a lot. So even if you're using Comet or Ajax, you still have to rinse it a lot to get rid of it. So that same principle applies to baking soda. You're going to use it, put it where you need it. Don't put it all up on the whole countertop and all over the hot and cold knobs. Only put it in your sink where you need it. And then have a big yogurt bucket with you that you're used to rinse, because it's going to take some rinsing to get rid of it. And then here's the other principle down there. The whole goal of cleaning is to neutralize the problem. So when you have a stain, you want to neutralize it and get it then so the material can be removed. So that's why when we have a bigger problem, we use something either more acidic or more basic. Citrusol is a grapefruit and orange peel extract that's available now. My husband uses it to clean the grease off bike chains. So that's a very acidic alternative. You could also probably use washing soda, too. It's just a matter of using, kind of balancing. If you need something stronger, you increase the acidity or the alkalinity. And then back to Annie's book, she says, be a smart cleaner. And to be a smart cleaner, that means think integrated. And it's a way to think about your household cleaning job. We've talked a lot about choosing the least toxic approach. We all make those choices at the grocery store. So spending a little extra time, and maybe focus just on one area you want to work on. Over time, if you do one small change a month, over a year you've made 12 small changes. So it's kind of overwhelming to say, oh, I'm going to do all this at once. Maybe just focus on laundry, soaps, or just focus on window cleaning.
Does she recommend bleach for general cleaning?
No, she doesn't. In a minute we'll get there, but hydrogen peroxide is simply water with an extra molecule on it, and it is a whitener and a disinfectant to be used kind of in household. And then we're going to talk about essential oils, which are also disinfectants. So in household products, we really don't need to use chlorine bleach, either in the laundry or for disinfecting. Now here at Holden, where we're doing dishes for 500 people, much bigger problem. It's probably the place that chlorine needs to be used. You know, it's that issue of scale. And then again, you know, to make it a goal to minimize or eliminate the man-made chemicals that you're using. And that's, when you start looking at it, another area of great interest are cosmetics. Think about your shampoo, and maybe you just need to minimize the products that you use. That's a simple choice. Use half as much each time. And then finally, there are some companies, Aubrey Organics is the one that I use, that uses all plant-based material. And then you have the problem that you do need some preservatives sometimes. Many of these products need a preservative in them, or you make small amounts and use them. And vitamin E, which you buy at the health food store, and I brought my vitamin E, and of course, I didn't check the lid before I brought it. But anyway, you buy vitamin E and just put a couple drops in your cleaning solutions to make things last.
What about the grapefruit seed extract
is another one of those very acidic things that again, works under those acid-based principles. Well, I know it's in a lot of products. I have a grease remover I bought to try that has it in. I think it is. She's talking about grapefruit seed extract as an alternative disinfectant, say, in hospitals. You know, we have such a cultural bias. We have such fear, I think, for the evils of these agents that it's really hard to get a hospital staff to think that they're really doing the best patient care by switching over. And that's a...
How do you use the vitamin E?
The vitamin E is just a preservative. It's an antioxidant. So when you make up some homemade cleaners, you put a couple drops of vitamin E in so it doesn't spoil. And also it's used in a lot of cosmetic products that you might buy at the health food store as a preservative instead of a chemical preservative. And then try and reduce the need to be clean. And this is my favorite one because, gosh, we certainly don't need to do more cleaning than we want to. But this one kind of can take, you can really do some thinking at your home about this one. So I put some examples up, and we'll get to those in a minute. And then also, we all have this myth that, if you don't use chemicals, you have to use a lot of muscle power, a lot of that elbow grease. And this is a principle that's in the speed cleaning book, the clean team stuff, as well as in the non-toxic stuff. You need time. These are chemical reactions that take time. So when you take a shower, and you're going to clean your shower stall maybe an hour later, go ahead and sprinkle your baking soda all over the base of the shower stall and spray it. I use a vinegar-based cleaner. Let it sit there for 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Come back, and there's not much muscle power to be used, but it takes a little bit of that planning ahead. Or in the speed cleaning book, they talk about you first go into the bathroom and you squirt your cleaner in the toilet bowl, you do it in the sink. While those things sit for a few minutes, you clean your windows, then you go to those. So they've had a little time. So that's kind of a nice, easy thing we can all do if you know you're going to be cleaning. And then the proper tools. It's a great excuse to go. You feel like you're buying Cadillacs. You go buy this like really nice brush. And I think we feel like, that's a waste of money. We really should make do with what we have. But I really think the speed cleaning people have you buy a nice scraper, like a paint scraper. So when you have all that gunk at your sink, you first mechanically scrape it off before you apply your cleaner and put it on. You buy yourself a very good, instead of an old toothbrush, you buy yourself a beautiful long-handled, really good strong toothbrush-like brush to do all that scrubbing. And I know that really has made a difference for me, and especially those rags. Get yourself good rags. It feels great to have matching rags.
Where do you find those good brushes?
A hardware store. So it's just going and, men tend to buy good tools and women tend to make do. So go to the hardware store.
Yeah. Janitorial supply place.
Great, a janitorial supply, that's great, yeah. And a really good squeegee for window cleaning. Vinegar and a squeegee can make sparkling windows, a high quality one. And then you have a long-handled one for doing outside windows. So I went through and I just thought of some examples of ways to just not have to clean in the first place. And I'm sure, I think you'll probably share some now because I'm sure a lot of you do this stuff. Here's an example. You want to minimize the dirt that gets tracked into your house and that ends up being floors you have to mop or carpets you have to vacuum. So if you have really high quality doormats, and I actually invested in very nice front doormats, very big, that can be shaken out often. And then inside your door, you have smaller rugs that can be manually shaken out as well. That's going to capture an awful lot of the dirt and keep it from becoming mud on the floor or tracked in things. And then many families now are converting over to taking their shoes off at the front door. We are bringing in a lot of things on the soles of our shoes. So, and that's kind of a comfort level. I know my parents come to visit and they just think we're crazy because I have this basket at the front door for shoes. And I say, you don't have to do it. It's kind of a comfort thing. And I've already mentioned after you take a shower when it's wet, go ahead and I always spray my shower door with my window cleaner a lot, so it's nice and wet, it has time to sit there. Then when I squeegee it off, it's easy. And then this one's harder, but keep a really good squeegee in your shower, and every time you take a shower afterwards, squeegee it off. You're gonna cut in half the number of times that you actually have the window get so bad you wanna go clean it. But it means every time you have to do it, and everybody has to buy into that. And then I've already mentioned the shaker of baking soda. So I bet a lot of you do those kind of things. Anybody have another one along this kind of line of minimizing? Yeah. Great. So she's using mechanical action often. That's a great idea. Anybody else? Yes, sweep the front porch. That's a great one. Yeah.
From a mother-in-law.
Yeah. So those things will come to you. You know, and it's your own house. You got it. Those are new habits to get. So let's go to what Annie calls her five basics. Oops, I put the wrong one up there. There they are. Okay, so her five basics. The first one she calls mineral mite, and that's baking soda. Here are the pHs. Baking soda, a neutral water is a pH of 7. So 12 times the stronger would be baking soda. And then borax is 9.25 for pH. And I didn't put washing soda up. It's the one that's over 11. And here are the functions of those things. They deodorize. And we know baking soda has always been used. You know, you might use it on carpet. It just simply as a dry powder is a deodorizer. It cuts grease and it dissolves wax. So that's another form of grease. And then the next principle, next would be what can we substitute for solvents? And solvents are man-made chemicals. What can we use that's naturally available that is a substitute? And that's where the washing soda can come in, that pH of 11. And you have to wear gloves. It is caustic, but there are no fumes. So you think of some other solvents that you might use have an air quality impact, whereas this one simply, if you touched it, you'd get a damage to your skin. And then there are a lot of citrus products available. This grapefruit seed she mentioned. And then Citrusol is just a brand name that I know that are good grease cutters. So, you know, instead of buying grease relief, which is in the grocery store, to get grease out of clothing, consider trying one of these citrus products. And you do need to test it like you would any kind of a product and find the one that works for you. And then her third principle are acid strength. And you need to buy white distilled vinegar, not the balsamic or the flavored, just the plain vinegar. And I have to tell you, my husband hates the smell of vinegar. And that's always been a negative because, part of cleaning, and this is a principle that Annie talks about in her books, we need to feel like when we leave a room, it is clean. And how do we feel it's clean? It smells clean. And this is the part I love because she gives you these immeasurable choices for what kind of smell you'd like. They're called essential oils. And you know, with candle making and soap making, there's an explosion of places that you can buy these. I brought lavender oil. It's 100% pure. This is a natural plant product, and a host of them contain terpene, which is a biocide. So it kills molds and bacteria. So you can use this as your disinfectant and also as a lovely smell. I like lemongrass. You might like sage or lavender, eucalyptus. You can choose the oil that you like, so all your cleaning products have this great smell. And I'll just pass this around, just take
a
whiff.
So you could put that in your vinegar?
You put a drop or two in your cleaner.
Oh,
so it no longer smells like vinegar, it smells like lavender.
And where would you get that?
These are available at health food stores or craft stores, because wherever those are. What, has anybody done the soap making or candle making, right? They're using these for candles? Yeah, I think so. They're easy to find. Yeah. Most of these things are a water-based cleaner. And I'll give you the recipe in a few minutes, but vinegar, you're going to dilute it with water and maybe add adding a little bit of soap. Yeah. It is on the laundry shelf. You'll be amazed. I brought my box top of borax. It's the big green box with the mule train on it. I'll pass this around, but washing soda is right next to it. Every grocery store has washing soda. And it's in the laundry part next to the borax. So here's the, my washing soda box was so full, I decided not to tear the top off and bring it. And then the next one are, I made this up, killer plants. Essential oils, which are disinfectants. And then here are the ones that are disinfectants. Now, essential oil of lemon is not a disinfectant. So you need to stick with the list that she gives. It includes lavender, tea tree oil, orange, lemongrass, rose, clove, eucalyptus, or cinnamon. So all those serve as a disinfectant, as well as a great smell. They do. It's in the bookstore. There are a couple copies, and it's on the first shelf as you go in. I think I recommended it, so they have some staff recommended books. Yeah.
If you have children, grandchildren, whatever, kids that get head lice, get tea tree oil, put them a couple drops in a full shampoo. Shampoo foam, shake it up. Now it'll really be a good one.
And lice is problematic, and so that, you know, there are quite a few remedies. I do a little internet searching to find out what is the most current information on that. I've seen a couple different things, and I haven't seen that one in particular. But there are alternatives to using the pesticide-containing shampoo.
The other one is Nutrabiotic.
And Nutrabiotic is a brand name, right?
Nutrabiotic is a brand name for
the grapefruit. The grapefruit seed, yeah. And a good source to look for that is the Washington Toxic Coalition website, because they update that. And I didn't go read the head lice one last week when I was looking at these, so I'm not sure what the most current is.
In Minnesota, there is a public school system that clean out the remedy for head lice is to manage instead of pesticide. This is the oil and animal substitute.
So again, it's looking at mechanical action. We can block oxygen from getting to those organisms by coating their bodies with oil. That's the mayonnaise principle. See, basic principles. And I misnumbered here. This is supposed to be number 5. This is the fifth of her 5 basic principles. We need to use either a soap or a detergent. And if you have hard or soft water, it's going to impact what you need. We pretty much all need to use detergents. The problem with soap is that it makes that grimy film. And that's just inherent in the chemistry of soap. But both of these things are called surfactants. And what they're doing, and here's the definition, it's a washing compound that mixes grease with water. And how does it do that? It breaks the surface tension of water. So again, that principle of breaking apart the water molecules so then the dirt can be removed. And soap is made either from animal fat or from vegetable oil. And the problem is that it reacts with the minerals in the water and forms that film. We all know that soapy film on things. It leaves a residue, it turns clothes gray. I know the shampoo products that I buy have soap in them, and one of the problems is you have to wash your hair more often because detergents move the greases from your hair more effectively than the soaps do. So there's that constant balance between using soap or a detergent, and most of us pretty much, at least in laundry, probably still need to use a detergent. Detergents are mostly synthetic, all derived from petroleum. Many of them have partial components that are plant-derived, and they react less with minerals. So if you have hard water, you have to, again, go to the grocery store, go to the health food store. There are a lot of products you can buy. I personally buy a 7th-generation liquid laundry soap. It's at Fred Meyer now. I no longer have to order it. I don't have to plan ahead so much to get a case. It's pretty easy now, just every week to go buy what you need at the grocery store. But you need look for one that says it's biodegradable. That's gonna mean there are more of the plant products in it. And look for ones that are without perfume. You know, you can add your own smell if you need it. Think about Tide. You know, again, we feel good because it smells clean, but really it's just the chemicals that were added to make it smell like Tide. But you might, that might be important to you. I know the one I buy now comes with 2 versions, one with no scent and one with a citrus scent. And I switched over to the citrus one because I like that smell. So again, it's getting a lot easier just to shop and not make it a life mission to figure out what kind of soap to buy. Now most of our states have eliminated phosphates in our laundry soaps. You probably know the story of phosphates. They are a fertilizer. So when we all had phosphates, which happened to work really well, phosphates are a real aid in cleaning. But they also soften water, which allows the surface tension of water then to break up more easily. But it gets into our waterways, causes the algae blooms, which then trigger kind of a collapse of the aquatic ecosystem. And in Washington State, they've been banned from all laundry products. However, they're not banned from automatic dishwashing soap powder. So, you know, one thing I've done is I have found one, and you know, frankly, they don't work quite as well. They have liquid automatic dish soap products, and they also have powdered ones. Seventh Generation puts them out. You have to seek those out at specialty stores. So it's kind of always a trade-off. But I feel better using that and having dishes that aren't quite as immaculately sparkling clean. And it goes back to the tools again. We have an old dishwasher, and we've decided to buy the brand new higher quality Maytag because it uses less water and it's going to clean the dishes mechanically, and we won't have to use as much of the soap. So it's a buying choice. We're going to spend more on a better dishwasher to reduce kind of the product that we have to use to clean.
You would look again for biodegradable or something in the dish?
In the regular aisle in the grocery store, most stores do not have an alternative to a phosphate-containing detergent automatic dish soap. You have to go to the health food store to find one. And they come in liquid or powder. And Seventh Generation is just one brand that I know of. I'm sure there's some. It's our overall use of chlorine. And one of the side effects is just the fact that they're so reactive and they form these organochlorines that have known negative side effects. So I'm going to give you recipes now. And what I love about this book is that she gives you 15 recipes to choose from. You know, maybe you want a soft scrubber that's got a little soap in it. And she gives you recipes in small amounts. Notice this one, I just chose two out of her book, and I have about 10 of them. You can take these home. This is her antiseptic alkaline cleaner. So kind of think about the principles we've done, and you'll see why the recipe's this way. 1 teaspoon of essential oil, and the list is there because those are the ones that are disinfectants. 1/2 teaspoon of washing soda. That's not much. You buy one box of washing soda, it's going to last 10 years because you don't use much. 2 teaspoons of borax. 1/2 teaspoon liquid soap or detergent. And again, you kind of make your own choice. There are a lot of liquid soaps. Dr. Bronner's Castile soaps are the common ones that are in Fred Meyer. They're in most health food stores. It's the one I use. They come unscented or scented. But again, you may need a detergent in it, especially if you have hard water. 2 cups hot water that helps the dissolving. And you combine them in a spray bottle. So you mix it all in your spray bottle. Now what I do is, because I'm kind of lazy, I want to be able to clean right away and not have to mix every time, I use milk jugs. I make this recipe times 4. And I put in some vitamin E as the preservative. So I have a milk jug that has about a couple months worth of my cleaner in it. So when I need it, when my bottle's empty, I can just refill it. And that's kind of a personal choice.
Do you need to shake it?
I do shake it each time because you'll sometimes see the borax coming out of solution.
But that adding that oil will preserve it.
And adding the vitamin E will preserve it. And the essential oil is the bacteria killer and the mold killer. And it's also what makes it smell good. And then the acid cleaner, this is what I call this my heavy-duty cleaner. I use it in my toilets where I have stronger problems. And this is my light-duty cleaner. And I use this on windows, in my microwave, on my countertops. It's kind of, you know, these are my two cleaners that I have. This is the acid one. Distilled vinegar or lemon juice. And I always use vinegar, but, you know, it's the acid principles. I have not used lemon juice.
Can you make all three of these ahead?
Yeah, you can make all of these ahead. Again, I make this in milk jugs. I use a funnel. And it's really important to add the water to your milk jug first because the soap bubbles up. So I've learned the hard way. And I bought myself a nice tiny funnel so I can stick it in the milk jug. I first add the water 3/4 of the way up the milk jug. Then I add the vinegar. And then I add the liquid detergent and the essential oil. Now this one doesn't have essential oil. And the fun thing about these is you can add it if you want. These are basic recipes that you can choose to add a scent to. You can choose to add the vitamin E too. I kind of like that flexibility. And I really like the fact that I can choose my smell. I'm switching to lavender. I've been doing lemongrass for a while, and now I'm going to switch to lavender.
And we have a water softener, but even so, we have very hard water. So
right.
Like the toilets, that's really
And that's where you might try that time principle. And, you know, maybe every day, you know, to avoid a big buildup of the hard water in your toilet, maybe every day you just keep right there in your cupboard in the bathroom this, the top cleaner. Maybe you just squirt it on every day and not do the scrubbing, but maybe once a week. So it kind of takes some experimenting. So anybody have any ideas that have struck them, things that they're doing along this line?
I just had a question. How long do you think that would last?
Without the vitamin E? Well, I have to tell you.
Without the vitamin E. No.
Well, without the vitamin E, they won't last more than a couple months. A
couple months?
Yeah, the vitamin E, you know, they do go bad. And I had my window cleaner went bad. I just made up some more. You just, you know, dump it down the sink and start over.
But you would
over.
Say a couple months probably.
Yeah. And again, you need to experiment. You know, it depends how warm your storage cupboard is. And if it starts to smell bad, it means it's somebody's living in there and you dump it away and start over. Well, I thought we'd, can we have a light? How to do the lights in here? Well, thank you. We have a very flexible technical department. They got us all set up in here and so we didn't have the cement trucks. So I was going to welcome you to come up and look at some of the handouts. I really like this. This is from the Washington Toxics Coalition, Buy Smart, Buy Safe, A Consumer's Guide to Less Toxic Products. And again, it really helps to not have to do the research yourself. So this is out, for example, under their scouring cleaners, they list a lot of choices. The first one is baking soda. And then they have boxes, Comet Cleanser. It has acute toxicity or chronic toxicity. So they look at what the literature says about chlorine, and they've marked it there. And then is it a physical or chemical problem? So they give you some basis for making a decision. And it's for all different lines of products. And there's something called the Green Seal. This was new to me, and I actually checked some of the products I have at home, and I didn't see it on there. It's that concept we talked about this week of labeling, the idea of fair trade coffees label. So this is that same idea, a Green Seal and what products. And on the website, you could go through and look at laundry soaps. They had a lot of categories. So just look this over, and then when you get home, it might be a website you want to look at. The thing about Annie Berthold Bond, she has an amazing website, and she does these little newsletters, their email newsletters. This one was vinegar kills bacteria, mold, and germs. So this is just a simple thing about vinegar. So if you like little bits of information, this might be a more fun way for you to get it. And I think you can sign up for this free.